Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Tyson Cornell. I'm here with Rachel Resnick, author of a number of fine works, Love Junkie and Go West, Young Fucked Up Chick. We're here today talking about all the excitement that's brewing with the West Hollywood Book Fair coming up this Sunday, September 30th, from 10 to 6 at West Hollywood Library and Park. Rachel, hello.
Good morning. How are you, Tyson?
How are you? Oh, doing well.
I'm just finishing my multi-flax pancakes here.
Well, now, breakfast is a pretty big, important part in your life, right? And I know you're a foodie, but you know, this is like the second or third time you've mentioned this morning.
Listen, all meals are important, not just breakfast. I'm not, you know, a breakfast fetishist per se. But I notice the difference because I'm really obsessive. When I don't eat breakfast, the wheels go off the track more quickly.
Yeah.
Don't you find that?
I do. I'm not really much of a breakfast person, but I definitely feel it, you know, if I don't do something before noon.
Exactly.
Did you happen to see that the book fair is introducing a culinary stage this year?
Well, do I get to be a taster?
Absolutely.
You should totally have me as a ringer in the audience because I'm just so appreciative. I mean, it's really funny because I've always been always appreciated food ever since I was a kid. But I appreciate it so much that I never thought I could cook. Because you can't cook unless you go to Cordon Bleu or something.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine, just over a year ago, won a cooking lesson, like a private lesson with this cool chef, Chef Miley Halme Brocky. And I'm sorry if I'm butchering her name, no pun intended, but she's amazing. And just as a lark, I went to join my friend at her house, someone I've known since college, and neither one of us can cook. And this woman just inspired us because she not only was a really great chef, but she really taught us how to do things. And I was like, what? That's how you cut garlic? I had no idea. I mean, one of the good things about having learned so few lessons in crucial areas growing up is you're like, what? That's how you comb your hair? Really? Okay. I'm always learning new tips. But she got me started, and after that, I've just been obsessively cooking.
And you're working on, I don't want to, you know, let the cat out of the bag, but you're working on a book that has food themes to it, right?
Yeah, well, the thing is, food has always woven in, but just not me as the creator of the food. And
yeah.
I had no idea how exciting that was. And I also keep thinking, because you know how they have psychological profilers for criminals?
Yeah.
And I'm always fascinated, you know, as the writer, what's the profile of a baker versus a savory cook? And which am I? And I probably am bipolar, schizophrenic or something. No, mildly, like most Americans or most writers, maybe, because I'll switch between them. I find them both really exciting for different reasons. Although when you bake, you got to have people over.
Now, do people in the people that work every day in the world of food and cooking, do they have the same type of stigma that dentists have? Like they're like a high suicide rate or...
Okay, that's a really good question because, of course, I'm always fascinated by those kind of things, too. I'm fascinated by many things, but I have noticed, because I've had the pleasure of hanging out with some incredible chefs, and, you know, Los Angeles is the proud owners of the first Pulitzer Prize-winning food critic, right? Jonathan Gold? How cool is that? L.A., man. Right? So... but what I do notice, because I have gotten to hang out with a few here and there, like Sue Feniger, who I love, and oftentimes they don't eat. I was like, what? They're so busy cooking, and they kind of get disgusted because they're around the food so much. And also they're so driven that they're working, and so they either don't have time or they're just over it.
Well, what about the adage that, you know, you don't... like don't trust a thin chef.
Don't what?
Don't
trust a thin chef.
Yeah.
I like that.
Never heard that before?
No, but it certainly makes sense, I guess. I don't know. Who's a thin chef? Oh, I did meet a pastry chef who was thin. That's definitely suspicious. But I'm suspicious of most people on some level, no?
Maybe it's time to eat, like you're saying.
Huh?
Maybe they just don't have time to eat, like you're saying.
Yeah, I think they get, you know, because once their food takes off and they're providing, I mean, imagine how, I don't know, we'll find out on the culinary stage. Hey, what is, I'm actually really curious what's going to happen. I would love to be a taster or like a ringer in the audience.
Sure, I think we can arrange that. Well, we have a lot of great people. Rocco Descurto.
No,
Ludo,
he's cute too.
Roberto Martin. We have the Wine Ecology ladies who have a great Culture of Wine book. The Hungry for Change Food Matters documentarian. It's a pretty good lineup.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Well, you know, I run, besides being a writer, I also am an entrepreneur, which I used to think was, what? You can't do that, too. And we've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
But my business, Writers on Fire, it started out as an alternative to learning how to write in classrooms. So like, would you rather write in a castle or a classroom? And would you rather have a nice meal and wine to go along with your creativity and inspiration? And how about in France? So I'm totally all about this kind of stuff because we don't know how long we're here for.
Well,
I want to enjoy it.
Education statistics might increase if people utilize that thinking a little more, huh?
Oh, it. Well, listen. I mean, I'm sure you did this too with your own business. You figure out, well, what do I like?
I get
inspired after a good meal, conversation like we're doing right now, travel, and having great food, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's so cool that you're tying that in. It's kind of interesting how, I mean, I wonder if they are suicidal. Now I'm going to go interview all the chefs, but
I don't know. That's interesting.
But I was curious, like, how could you write a memoir that's just food-based? I mean, do you have a strong relationship to food yourself? If you're blowing off breakfast, maybe not.
I don't. I'm a binge and purge type of guy.
Punk roots?
No, it's not intentional. I'll go for the entire day without eating anything and realize, why do I feel nauseous? Why does my head hurt? And then I'll realize that I haven't had anything to eat all day.
Well, also because you're obsessive, right?
Obsessive, drinking lots of coffee. But then and then I'll just really indulge.
Now, I wonder, because I know, I'm really excited about moderating this panel on Sunday as a tribute to Marilyn Monroe and the 50th anniversary of death, which is so trippy to realize. I see posts about her every day on Facebook, everywhere. She's in the news all the time. It's 50 years. But I wonder, I actually don't know what she ate, because one of the cool things about her is she's not skinny. She's a woman.
She was, what, 145
pounds? I don't know how much she was. I should know, huh? If I'm going to be moderating a panel.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, people see that, but she really, I mean, she wasn't skinny with today's standards, but she wasn't heavy.
Oh, no, she wasn't heavy, but she looked like she ate breakfast and, you know.
Normal woman.
Yeah. But I'm curious, since everyone seems to, you know, post about her all the time, did she make any impression for you? Because I think it goes across gender and generational, but I'm, because I hadn't been thinking about her, but now I'm thinking about her again, and she is kind of almost always present in a way. Does she have any place in your psyche, Tyson?
Well, the way I think of Marilyn, I'm like a true crime nut, and my reference point with Marilyn Monroe is always from Hollywood Babylon and from the Kennedy conspiracy. Misfit songs.
Misfit song, did you say?
Misfit song. Songs by the band, the Misfits. I remember the the information based on her death from, I can't remember the song right now. It must be Who Killed Marilyn. Yeah, 525, August 5th, 1962.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
A lyric. That's how I remember it. But, no, I think, I mean, they're just some really defining iconography that we deal with culturally that, you know, it's hard to look back and really see that correlating to somebody that actually existed. You know what I mean?
That someone what?
That somebody actually existed and was a Marilyn Monroe. Or
It's pretty cool because one of the books that two of them are more image oriented. One of them is I'm so interested in, like, how the heck this woman grew up with her dad was like the first person to photograph Marilyn, that transformation from Norma Jean to Marilyn. I mean, can you imagine you're a young girl and your dad's like part of the creation of Marilyn? What that might do to your sense of girlhood and sexual power, and I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna ask her about that. But so that one's got a lot of incredible photos and just that idea of transformation. Which going back to books, since you know, one of the reasons I get to do these things, the last book I wrote was a memoir, which is so much about. I don't know. I mean, I want to. You should write one because have you ever thought of doing one?
Doing it
yourself?
The only memoir that I would consider writing is playing music in Japan. That's the only thing. It's the only thing that I think is interesting.
But you're way ahead of the game because most people are like, oh, I want to write a memoir. And they start from like, and I was wriggling through the birth canal. And you're like, dude, you gotta narrow the focus and come up with something. Unless you're a celebrity, we don't want to hear every single, you know, or a political figure. So that's actually brilliant that you have a specific time frame and period. You should totally do that.
That's the only thing that I think would be of interest. But you know,
humble.
I work in the book industry, but I mean, to me, it's the center of the universe, and I think that hanging around with particular authors is a lot more exciting than touring around the world with rock bands. No doubt about that. Authors are crazier and more exciting.
Are they? Wait a second. Authors are crazier than rockers?
Oh, absolutely.
What? Okay. Now look at I want to hear. Give me an example.
Well, not all authors, but
sure.
Particular authors. I mean the nights that have really gotten me into a lot of potential trouble isn't with people in rock bands, and I've played with
Tyson, dish up, but give me one juicy story.
Well, you know, I don't know what it is. I think there's something to do with authors living in this microcosm, in this fantasy world. They, you know, it's like they get out into the real world, and some adapt well, and others don't really, you know, take the transition. I remember I played music in Kosovo in 2008, and it was on a NATO military base, and I was told that the people that were stationed there were there because they had been to Iraq and they're not ready to go back home. That's how I kind of think of authors outside of their desk or outside of their writing world. They're not ready to go back to real civilization. They're stuck in like kind of this place between two worlds. And some authors just that, you know, it inspires certain things and it drives them crazy. And I've been there with authors in those circumstances.
So you're not going to give us another? Well, that's a pretty great quote. I'm not going to press you anymore, although I'm dying to hear a specific story.
Wait for the book. I don't know. I love, because I'm a book nerd, I love books about books and writers and stuff like that. But for the most part, I don't think the general public is that interested in what book industry people do. I mean, Wendy Ware's book is probably the only one that I can think of that references book industry.
Who?
Wendy Ware's book.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or the book on the history of Penguin Classics. That was pretty interesting, but, you know.
Right. Well, you have to drop Marilyn in there, or someone once told me that in order to sell books, all you have to do, and you know, I have also a commentary, but I'm saying this without judgment. If you put a swastika on the cover of a book, or if you put women's legs, instant sale. Now, that what that bespeaks on many levels is a whole other discussion. And I don't know if it's the same, but gives pause. It gives pause.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true.
Well, maybe it's not. You're in the business, so. But I wanted to bond with you on the true crime predilection, as well as you having set up the culinary stage. I don't know if you know that I worked as a private investigator for a year once upon a time. And
no, you did that.
I loved it so much. It was this. Speaking of misfits, too, it was just the coolest collection of misfits over in Silver Lake. And I'm working on writing about that now, finally. But there's something so alluring. I think I was just quoting something from Octavio Paz about how Americans are just obsessed with things like the detective novel.
Yeah.
From the get-go, right? But that's not necessarily, you know, like he was saying, Latino culture, in Octavio Paz's opinion, in Labyrinth of Solitude, that's way more about myths and legends and things, but we're into fairy tales and detective stories.
Well,
and I think someone said that all stories are detective stories on some level.
That might be a stretch, but I can see where that might be true on some levels. I'd love. I'm a crime nut, whether it's fiction or true crime.
Yeah.
You know, those are the books that I wake up in the middle of the night and have to read 10 pages and you know, turn off the phone for and really get addicted to. And I get to the last page and I really do want to go back to page one and keep reading.
Yeah. Well, so I'm not only doing the modern, you also have me doing literary deathmatch. So I have to break out these different stories and stuff. And it's so interesting to get a chance to not only, like you said, for writers like myself to emerge from the cave, from my sanctuary up here in Topanga Canyon and get out in the world and speak in public and read, you know, I'm immersed in all these books about Marilyn. I'm also looking over all my writing. And you have to also be a performer.
That's true. I think that's one. I mean, when I work with authors, that's the one area that usually needs the most emphasis. Because I mean, kind of what we were talking about before. You know, it's like it's a solitudinal profession. It's solitudinal work, and then you publish.
Did you just coin that word?
I coined it years ago.
It's Tyson's language. I like that.
But, you know, it's like you have to be a performer. And, you know, I see authors all the time that can't do it or they resist it. And, you know, they're kind of sticking to the idea that, no, I'm an author. I don't have to be an entertainer. But, you know, when they realize that they are able to sell more books, and sometimes it's the only way they can sell books if they're out there pushing it and performing from it. Those are the ones that really strive.
I think this is such a great setup for it too, framework. Because I was saying it's like getting ready for some kind of sport. I think all writers should have to do not only exercise but do some kind of sport. I think it's one of the greatest preparations for life. So sometimes I'll shift gears like, oh, it's literary deathmatch. We're going into the ring.
Yep.
You know, and back to, I don't know if you ever you saw Rise, but way back when the movie about the battles, the dance battles in L.A., but, you know, and poetry with Def Jam poetry, you know, there's that style of really battling, which can be so fun. I remember I just joined a playwriting group. I was just, I think it was 3 years or so, and it was so mind-blowing compared to, like you said, solitudinal work, which I love that expression. And it was such a high. You sit there, you write something that day, you give it to some actors, they get up and I would sometimes just collapse and giggles and just delight. You know, of course, it wasn't, other times I would hide in the chair when you write something, you think, ooh, this is so good, and they stand up to read it and just falls completely flat.
Mm-hmm.
It works on the page, but there's something just so exciting about collaborating. And that's why something like this, you know, I think we crave community and collaboration so much as solitary writers. So to have these festivals and the West Hollywood Book Fair is so groovy because it's small scale, even though you have that swanky, cool library now, but it's so much smaller scale. Like, what was I doing? Huh?
Rachel, I wouldn't use the term small or small scale. It's intimate. You know,
I thought I was the wordsmith.
It's still a it's a sizable event. Last year, Publishers Weekly reported 25,000 to 30,000 people.
Jesus.
And there are people flying in from all over the country.
What? Well, you got, look at anything that you have your hands in, there's no question. I'm sure it's exploding. But what I meant, and I'm terribly sorry, I'm going to have some more coffee because clearly that will help me knit my brain together better. But I definitely meant intimate because that's how I run Writers on Fire, relative to some of them are too large. They're overrun. But it always – I'm amazed. That just makes me even more admiring of you because it feels – it always feels intimate. You know, I remember hanging out, having conversations with Steve-O before some event, and it just, well, I think it's also the way you guys, I don't know, I mean, I'm not the most organized person, but it always goes really smoothly, and you do get to see, it's like a reunion, and you also really get to interact with people, and some of the other festivals just feel like you've dropped into another country where you're in a bazaar.
Yeah.
And you're elbowing people and with their goodie bags and stuff. And it's more about swag bags of books, which is fun too, but that's really cool. I didn't realize it was that big, but I did mean that somehow you preserve that intimacy, which is, because, you know, there's, and I know you know this, but there's this desire for readers and fans now. They want to have conversations like straight up. If they can't, you know, they want to be able to find you on Twitter and Facebook and then to have an opportunity where you're actually reading and talking directly to people is so great.
Well, kind of going back to what you said earlier about being interested in the things that you really kind of gear your work and your life toward. The West Hollywood Book Fair is a great example of this is a book fair that I would go to.
What is it that distinguishes it for you?
What's that?
What is it? What distinguishes it for you as someone who would go to it?
Well, I like the aspect that it's experiential.
Yeah.
And
perfect.
It's kind of what Julie Robinson and I from Literary Affairs did a couple of years ago with the Beverly Hills Literary Escape, and that whole idea was to create intimate events with finite capacities so people could come in and interact and have these really intimate things. I spend a great deal of time with authors, and I'm constantly thinking, this is the experience that I want to share with with other people.
Yeah, we're totally in agreement, because I said, like, the way I conceived of Writers on Fire, the business I run, which started out with a retreat in a chateau at the base of the Alps in France,
yep.
and gathered a group of under 10 writers just to have this immersive experience, something they can always have. And you know, I call myself both a literary alchemist and a book wrangler, so it's kind of tapping into the magical side, which is more experiential, and then also just the practical, like how do you perform your pieces and how do you publish. And but there is, however you can create intimacy, whether it's in a scale of, like you're talking about, 25,000-30,000 people, or on a smaller scale, just having that attitude is so key. And then when I run my workshops, I keep them intimate as well. And then, of course, I do one-on-one work, because there's something, but I always include events that are for the Writers on Fire community. We have to do something together.
I know.
Like minds.
Well, Rachel, we've known each other a lot, and we do stuff together, but we need to do more.
More.
And
that includes culinary, cooking stage, too, and the free-flowing wine. Oh, that's so funny.
Right.
No, I know. We have. In fact, we once shared, you got to eat some of my food. What did I make that, like, Hatch chili stuff?
I did. I brought an author and her husband
yes.
over to your place, and
yes.
I think 6 hours flew by, like 10 minutes.
That was so...
I remember looking at my watch, and it was, or my phone, and it was like 2:57 in the morning. And I maybe thought it was 11 o'clock.
Yeah, that was a totally magical evening. And everyone was so, I mean, courageous, because those Hatch chilies were hot.
They were.
Super hot. Yeah, that was so
that
much
was
fun.
That's great. Well, to recap.
Yeah.
Can you tell us again what you're doing this Sunday at the book fair? You're doing two different sessions.
I'm doing two different events. You got me working, man. I'm working.
Right.
I'm working. The first thing I'm going to be doing, and I love moderating, because like I'm immersed in these three books and thinking all about Marilyn, and that I'm going to moderate that panel with three book writers on Sunday at 11:30 to 12:30. I don't know the exact, but people can look it up on the counter. But it should be a lot of fun. I'm also going to offer some of the workshops and retreats and things, specials, if people show up to the event. And then I'm going to be performing my own writing in three rounds, which I love that, and you got to tell me how long I have, in the Literary Death Match, and a bunch of cool writers, and then three judges. So that'll be, is it 5:30 to 6:30 or 5? It's 5 to 6
five,
that same day.
5 to 6. It's one of the things that really is geared to close out the book fair.
Oh, my God. Okay. I got to bring it.
It's in the main park area. It's on what is called the Eclectic Cafe stage.
Ooh.
And Jones Coffee is sponsoring that stage the entire day. So it'll be set up in kind of a cafe, salon, loungy environment with
ooh, love it.
With coffee. For everybody, yeah, it's gonna be nice. So the book fair again, Sunday, September 30th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at West Hollywood Library and Park. It's on San Vicente between Santa Monica and Melrose Avenue. And if you have any other information, interests, you can go to westhollywoodbookfair.org. So Rachel, thank you so much. It's great talking with you, and thanks again for being so much a part of this year's book fair.
Tyson, it's my huge pleasure. I'm just blown away by what you guys have created. I'm really happy to be part of it.
Well, in your honor, I think we're going to get out here with a little In Crimson from one. So we'll see you soon.
Sounds good.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Tyson.